Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, this should be an interesting one. A lot of things to talk about. We'll try to have as honest of a discussion and back and forth. Honestly, I'm pretty excited to see what this podcast is. Think it may be a pretty good product, hopefully, by the time we hit the end record button. But can only be as enjoyable as a 0-2 podcast could possibly be. But before we jump into it, want to thank Louisiana Hot Sauce, as always, a great partner for us. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, and something that we ask that you please keep in mind, regardless of how many wins this team has posted so far in the season.
Ingram, we don't bring the heat too often, but Louisiana Hot Sauce does, always.
Yeah. Heat may be brought at times tonight.
But we're going to bring the heat tonight. Yeah, it's time. We're not just going to sit here and rant and rave for an hour and 15 minutes. That's not going to happen. But we're big on sample set, right? And on not assuming things. And on giving things time to play out. And you know, taking a look at things and making sure that you got enough evidence before you just kind of go off the deep end. But man, we were debating topics tonight and we were debating titles. And then I think I finally came up with it, and we were kicking some back and forth. And I think what we're going to end up going with is Jimbo Fisher doubled down on his coaching staff and lost. He had the option to make changes after last year, after a season that a lot of things were covered up by the winning streak down the stretch, and perhaps by playing some teams down the stretch that weren't as good. They did show some improvement. They also showed some, you know, maybe some remaining questions. He didn't. He kept the same coaching staff together. And this is the result. 0-2, a loss that is really just all too familiar. And you know, really, it's a loss that in some ways is unacceptable because it didn't come because of a meltdown from your freshman quarterback, and it didn't come to a team with superior athletes to you. And it's a painful loss. There's no doubt. I got to tell you, man, I'm madder after the rewatch because it's the guys making the mistakes. It's the coaching staff allowing these guys to make mistakes, not putting them in positions to succeed, not doing their job, stealing money from Florida State. I mean, they're acting like Gator players with credit card numbers. All right, these coaches are not doing their jobs. Jimbo Fisher has failed in replacing the coaching staff that he lost after the championship team. I think it's very clear now we can say that. It's extremely hard to continually replace all these coaches, but man, it's not working. The message is not getting through. So let's go down and just kind of go through position by position like we normally do, and at the end we'll kind of hit some more of the big picture issues.
All right, let's start at quarterback. Like you said, not the reason you lost. Not even one of the first three or four reasons you lost, and not necessarily, at least in my opinion, certainly we'll listen to yours, particularly after having a chance to rewatch, but not necessarily that you got a level that you wouldn't have gotten out of your previous player either. I mean, you of all the things that you can look back and be frustrated with, situation at quarterback's not one of them. Certainly had some mistakes, potentially tied to some of the offensive linemen that jumped at times in the game. But on the whole, that was a pretty solid performance and certainly saw actions that that perhaps were the basis of some of the hype that we heard coming out of camp and then out of the locker room the past 2 weeks in particular.
Look, he made some throws that Francois doesn't or can't make. Those downfield throws, Francois doesn't hit those. He misses them. He sails them by 10 yards or he throws them. You know, I think Blackman has better natural accuracy than Francois does. He just has a better feel for throwing the football. Some of the downfield accuracy, man, that is a skill. And I don't know how well you can teach that. So if he's got that, if that's something he can do consistently, and I happen to think it's something he might be able to do consistently because he did it in high school too, that's a really good sign. And I got to tell you, for all this, the negative we're going to talk tonight, we're going to talk some negative. I'm very encouraged by James Blackman. There's some times when it looks like he's rushed a little bit. You can certainly tell he's nervous early in the game. The one difference I would say between him and Francois at this point is just knowledge of the offense. I think there are times that Francois would have got us in or out of different plays, and I'm not saying he was perfect with the run checks. Far from it. Francois certainly made a lot more mistakes than like a Jameis or a Ponder or even an EJ did in that regard, but I'm encouraged by where they, you know, where they're at with Blackman. Do they win the game with Francois? Probably, yeah. But I don't think that I don't think that Blackman was the reason they lost the game. There are other players in the game who played far worse. Players who have been on campus for many more weeks. You're right. I think two of the motion penalties were on Blackman. He certainly points at himself. And I thought that was a really mature move by a freshman, right? Going and saying, hey, man, that's on me. Jimbo Fisher addressed this. I guess he switched up the cadence on one. I don't know if that means he didn't, like, call it out loud enough in the huddle. And then on the snap infraction, you can kind of see Eberle turning around and giving him kind of the WTF look. But still, I thought he played pretty darn well. You know, there's some misses, certainly, and those are going to happen at some. But for his first game, I think he played up to expectations and perhaps above expectation in some regards.
Yeah, I thought he played really well. I mean, I'm sure he'd love to have that ball back to Rasul that he underthrew. Also completely understandable that he had Chubb running in his face for maybe the fifth or sixth time in the game at that point. And there were some misses, certainly. I will say that I don't think Francois changes the outcome of this game personally. So we'll have a little bit of a disagreement there. Nothing wrong with that, but I don't know that your level of quarterback would be particularly higher. Now, maybe Francois does some things better, particularly before the snap, but just my initial reaction is I don't know that the outcome's any different in this game if you sub one piece in for the other.
Can we talk special teams real quick in that they were really good? The returns were more physical. The guys were better at blocking them, and I thought they did a better job returning the ball.
Well, that's because we put Laybourne back there, bud.
Oh, this is true. Good God. Like, is there not somebody that can go and tell the announcer that at halftime, hey...
Well, that's the spotter's fault.
Absolutely.
First of all.
Yes.
As somebody who's worked in production, the spotter... But after the second time, it's not the spotter's fault. That's your damn fault. And by the way, you're talking about one of the better defensive backs in college football. You need to recognize that guy. But just a little side ingredient in some of the... some of the humor that was offered up unintentionally.
In fairness, that guy was having a long week. I believe after the game, he had to hop a flight and go call the Cubs game that night, or the White Sox game, whatever it was. He had to go call a pro baseball game in Chicago that he had said. But yeah, maybe somebody from Florida State is listening to the broadcast. He could say, hey, know, the kid's name is not Laybourne, right? This is pretty clearly Tavares McFadden. And they blocked a punt. There you go. Kind of neat there. Brian Burns, I think, could be a good guy to block punts. Long, really athletic, very very explosive. Nice job. Kicking field goals on the day was not that bad. I don't want to see you miss a 30-yarder, but what was he, 3 or 4 on the day or whatever? Not too terrible. Logan Tyler punted the hell out of the ball. Can we talk about Jimbo Fisher's mismanagement with the onside kick, with the lack of an onside kick?
We can. I'll only make one comment real quickly, and Aguirre recovered nicely, but the uneasiness that existed in the first quarter... Sure, nothing was helped by missing that first kick. Now, I'm kind of picking nits here, but if anything, I just think that somewhat created to an uneasy narrative that made itself known. NC State scores with like 9 minutes in the first quarter, and from that period on, I think as a fan base, you had to have a little legitimate concern as to whether or not you were ever going to win this game.
Yeah, it did. It did kind of give you a feeling of like, oh, here we go again. I discussed this a little bit on the Instant Reaction Pod. I know you and I have discussed it more since, privately. In his post-game press conference, Jimbo Fisher claimed that FSU would get the ball back with a minute and 20. That's
impossible.
Not, no.
An insult. It really kind of...
I hope he was just tired and just like, you know... I don't want to say he was lying.
That's insulting to people that actually care about football. You can't say
people with
like
a watch.
Because it's flat out impossible.
Yeah, okay. He's off by a really important margin here, and that margin is a full play clock. The absolute best you can do in that scenario, unless NC State like runs out of bounds or throws an incomplete pass, which we'll talk about, because the way they called that third down FSU defensively was a little bit surprising to me. But, man, he said they would get a ball back with a minute 20? Hell no. They were going to get the ball back with like probably 35, maybe at best 40 seconds on their own side of the field with no timeouts. That was an error. You have got to onside kick there. I don't care what he says. He's wrong. It's not like I'm questioning somebody who's normally good at these situations. He routinely mismanages these situations, you know, and that's not something you need a whole lot of knowledge of football to understand. You just need to be able to do some simple math and look at some probabilities. So disappointing there from the head coach, Jimbo Fisher, but not the only disappointing thing in this game. Ingram, after the rewatch, I got to tell you, I think Jaquez Patrick played better than I thought he played live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his pass protection, I thought, was decent. He clearly has a good knowledge of the offense. His attempt to catch that ball was really strong. He just got pushed out of bounds. I thought he actually played a pretty good game. And I was all really prepared to come on here and say, look, Cam Akers needs all the touches, all that kind of stuff. But I'm not ready to do that yet. I think Patrick needs to keep getting the ball some. But at the same time, this offense has completely lacked explosive runs. I don't think we have a 20-yard run this year, do we?
Not that comes to mind.
I mean, granted, they've played two of the best defensive fronts in college football, which
I think our longest run is 17 yards. I don't know that for sure, but that's what I was thinking after the game.
Florida State is listed as having one run of 20-plus yards. One.
Okay.
Not the best. You want to know who...
Is that a quarterback?
Oh, it might be James Blackman's run of 20 yards. The scramble. I don't know. Yeah, right. You may be right on that. They're a company there. Arkansas State, East Carolina, Eastern Michigan, Fresno State, Illinois, Miami, Ohio, UTEP, Vanderbilt, Georgia State, Ole Miss, and Western Kentucky. Yeah, that's not too good. Which is why I know you're going to bring up this point. Explosive plays are needed from the run game.
So I think what you're talking about with Patrick is true, and I also thought more of him and going back and watching the game. But I think Florida State just needs to do a better job of putting him in situations where he can really succeed. And ultimately, I'll get back to what you were saying there with explosiveness, Bud. But I think, and this is one of the reasons why for 3 or 4 years I've talked about maybe running some two-back sets where you get two halfbacks, two tailbacks in. You need to do a better job of using his strengths and trying to put him in position. And maybe that's throwing him and getting him involved in the pass game more, where a lot of times if you have a two-back set, you can get a much better matchup as to who's going to be guarding backs out of the backfield. What you're alluding to, and this is something that we talked about, is that in my opinion, Akers might, maybe the best blocked run play of the game went to Akers. Maybe it didn't, but three of the four of the plays that I thought we blocked best were for Jaquez Patrick, and they were nice plays. They were 8 or 9 yard gains, which are nice, but those don't do a whole lot for you as far as going back and finding plays that really won you the game or explosive, you know, 30-yard plus carries. We acknowledge it, and we tried to acknowledge it, and we're still probably coming to terms with it. But we're all spoiled by the guy who carries the ball for Minnesota right now. And so we've got to, like, get that out of our mind where, well, Dalvin would have taken that to the house, etc. But you still can have a very legitimate expectation for explosive plays out of your run game, and I just don't know that Patrick's ever going to bring that to the table.
I think I agree with you there, absolutely. Now, you mentioned a great point on using more of the pony package. And if you're a new listener, pony package is what Florida State that's what they call their two running back package with no fullback in. And I'm all about that package because your fullback right now is not a good player. Jonathan Vickers got blown up more than once in this game. He's not an impact blocker. I know he's unselfish, but he's also not that talented. Why not use Patrick and Akers more at the same time? I'm 100% about that.
I'd like to see you use pony package, Bud, but there's nothing that says that you can't, and this is not necessarily going to change up what the defense identifies as personnel. There's nothing that says you couldn't run an I formation and have Patrick line up as the fullback there and then immediately go to maybe two plays in pony so that hopefully you can get a better defensive package if they do actually respond to the fullback theoretically on the field or personnel that they may keep on the field that they otherwise would have taken off. But I just think you can move Patrick around some, and I'm not saying a full-time shift to fullback or anything like that, but you could get him to line up in places that would put him in a hell of a lot better situation than where we are right now with how we're using
him. I absolutely agree. I mean, and I only mentioned pony package because, A, it's a you know, term that people like to use, but, B, you know, Blackman seems most comfortable from the shotgun. I mean, probably, I don't know, three-quarters of his snaps were from gun. Just thinking about that. I think that's probably something you could see going forward. You want to go O-line or receiver now? Probably the two positions. Well, the one position everybody wants to talk about, and then the other position they probably should be talking about more.
Let's go O-line and really, really save something special for our final look at offense.
Okay. I thought the first half they played above their heads. Florida State didn't come away with enough points in the first half, but I really thought they blocked it up well. That's an elite front they're playing. I'd give them very high marks for the first half. I thought the second half, NC State's defensive line beat them up, which is kind of what I expected to happen for the whole game. That's actually what we said would happen in the preview and also in the preseason. You remember, like we said, hey, they're going to get physically whipped. The NC State D-line is very, very good. I don't know why people were really surprised about that. I was actually surprised they played as well as they did in the first half. You know, you had some issues with Derek Kelly jumping, I think, twice that were actually his fault, which is, you know, kind of uncharacteristic for him, I guess, but still, it's unacceptable to have that going on at home. I mean, not like the crowd was good, but it certainly wasn't making noise when you were on offense, so extremely disappointing there. That's on coaching, not having those guys keep discipline. I know two of them were on the freshman, the quarterback, but still, you want to see other guys rise to the occasion to help out your true freshman quarterback, and it just didn't happen enough. You know, the one thing I thought they could have done a better job of, really, was getting to the second level in run blocking, maybe pick up those backers a little bit better. NC State did do a really good job of using their defensive tackles to keep blockers off their backers, so I'll give them some credit for that. That's a very good front you're playing. And I do grade stuff on a curve. If you're playing a really elite defensive front, I'm going to grade you a little bit differently than maybe another position group that's playing, I don't know, say a pretty trash secondary or something, which we might discuss in a minute. But Ingram, I know you caught this on the broadcast, and Jimbo Fisher brought it up afterwards. He talked about how they had two or three missed chips that guys are supposed to chip and didn't do it, which, again, is on coaching. That's not O-line coaching, by the way. That's running back or tight end coaching, depending on who they wanted to have chip. On the broadcast, you said something like they had some kind of package or something that they were using or something?
Well, I don't put a whole lot of stock into what is said by anybody in the booth, just because I've worked with too many people who do those games, and I know that sometimes they're full of crap. But I don't think this guy just fabricated this story. He said at the end of the game something along the terms that Florida State – Fisher had made a comment that they were going to almost like a boxing analogy, that they were going to work Nick Chubb's body, work him, attack the stomach and the head will follow if you're a boxing fan. And they were going to chip him, work his ribs, etc. That never happened. And there might have been one play in the second half where we attempted to chip. We never chipped Nick Chubb, and we never sent anybody that I can tell. Look, I'll be honest with you, have not gotten, nor probably will I, get my hands on an all-22 here. So I'm going off what's on TV, but I don't see any attempt to chip Nick Chubb, which this kind of opens up we could have a little bit of a broader conversation based off of this.
Are you going to talk about the lack of confidence that the players are putting in the coaching staff because what they're repping in practice is not what they're doing on the field?
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm going.
Okay, yeah, because I've now heard that from a couple people.
Okay.
That the players are starting to doubt the coaches because what they're doing in practice is not really matching up fully with what they're doing on the field.
You can choose to believe this or not, but I will tell you that the talk that we had 3 or 4 days ago or 5 days ago, that Florida State was looking to run two tight end sets, we didn't just pull that out of thin air. And that was with in mind of helping an offensive line that was going against maybe the best or the second best unit it was going to see all year. That formation was used once in the fourth quarter. Now, I'm not saying that was going to be their dominant formation throughout the game, but they were that. In my opinion, that was going to be something that they fell back on time to time to give assistance to a unit that was playing one of the better levels of competition that they'll see all year. There is no greater way to lose a team than to have what you do on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday not match up with what you ask them to do on Saturday. And I don't think that there's too many... I don't think we're really reaching to have real legitimate concerns that there may be an element of that within the program right now.
Look, there's a clear lack of trust in the players or in the coaches from the players. They don't trust what these coaches are doing. Probably because they saw these coaches fail them last year. All right. And this year, I don't know if they can break out promise notes or something, but you're right. They had this plan to chip and wear down Nick Chubb, and they just didn't use it. They didn't do it. Didn't happen. And you hung your left tackle out to dry. That is not putting Derek Kelly in a position to succeed. He cannot block Nick Chubb one-on-one with any kind of consistency, and asking him to do so is, but they did it far too often. And
they did it almost exclusively.
Look, and I think Derek Kelly's had a good year, like relative to who he's had to play. But now you're making him look like a jerk out there, trying to block Bradley Chubb one on one. Come on, that's ridiculous. I'm already too fired up over this. Let's go to the next.
I'm gonna go against you, bud. I'm gonna broaden this one more degree here.
All right.
Let's talk about Chubb spitting on the logo, and that we won't talk. Don't give a damn about that. What I do care about from the second series of this game, it was pretty clear to me that Chubb was trying to knock Blackmon out of the game. I don't hold that against him. That personally is what I'd like to see our defensive ends, and our defensive ends are. That's not directed at. That's not a complaint about what we have a defensive end. We're quite fine there. But I'd love to see that attitude from everybody on our defense. I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem is that nobody seemingly responded to a guy who, and I've said this on Twitter, was basically all but dry humping the quarterback. Like, taking him to the ground, just excessive. But that's fine. That's what happens. Again, I'm not faulting Chubb here. What I am fault, maybe a little bit, personnel not responding to that. But I have a real big problem with coaching either not helping, not giving help to your left tackle there. Or there's certainly plays you can call, bud, where I'm not suggesting somebody goes in and tries to blow out somebody's knee, but you can crack a guy, you can crack back, you can at least in a football sense let somebody know that you're not just going to be able to do whatever the hell you want to our quarterback all day. It's that more than anything bothers me. Well, there's a lot of things that bother me, so I shouldn't qualify it with more than anything. But that was one of the things that initially stood out to me and was most concerning about this game. And there's also too good of a highlight tape over the past 2 years of Florida State's quarterback getting the absolute shit beaten out of him. And that is being supposedly being used against you on the recruiting trail.
I look, as it should be, right? Jimbo Fisher's offense is very pro-style. It actually doesn't protect the quarterback very well. His guys hold the ball for a long time because some of the plays take a long time to develop. There's not a lot of real quick short throws in this thing like you see in more of these college spread offenses. Part of that's going to happen. Now, part of that, too, is on offensive line coach Rick Trickett because I don't think his line is as good as it needs to be. It's also on coach Jay Grant for not having his guys protect like they should and not having all those guys work together. You don't see a whole lot of teamwork on this team. Really, over the last 2 years, they don't really play as a unit. They don't really complement each other as a unit. But that look, I would use it against Florida State on the recruiting trail. I'd probably use the fact that they have a bunch of senior citizens on their coaching staff on the recruiting trail, and that they can't relate to younger guys. That's what I would use. Average age 55 years. I don't know if you saw that or not. Terrible. Not turning over the coaching staff. Not keeping these guys young and fresh. That's not good.
That's almost impossible, too, with the way that staffs are designed, particularly if you don't have like a Paterno or a Snyder or a Bowden on your staff. When your head coach is the age he is and that's your average age, that's a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah. Surround yourself with a bunch of yes men. Yeah. All right, let's go to the worst position on the field, the receivers.
Frustrating. This is not the first time we've had this this conversation.
So Nooney Murray and Keith Gavin, do they play on Saturday? Because I know a lot of balls got thrown at them, but they didn't do anything with them.
I also remember us having allocate a few timeouts directed their way too.
Yeah, because they can't get lined up. Because Lawrence Dawsey, who might be the worst coach on this staff, who I really believe would have been fired a long time ago had he not been an FSU legend, 2 draft picks in 10 years, not an ace recruiter, constant screw ups by his unit. Having to waste multiple timeouts because his guys can't get lined up, can't get the signal, can't get the call. It's always the same thing. Oh, we missed a route. We missed an adjustment. We missed this. The guy ran the wrong route. He didn't have the right leverage. He didn't line up right. He was too far from the sideline. He was too close to the sideline. Look, if your system's this complicated, find somebody who can teach it or simplify it, period. Because Dawsey's not getting it done. Nooney Murray, why do they have to beg him all the time for effort? Right? That dude, 11 targets, 29 yards for Murray, 6 targets, 17 yards for Gavin. I know Gavin was hurt a good bit last year and didn't play much, so I'm a little more understanding on him. But Murray, and maybe he rolled his ankle at practice on Thursday. I know we had heard that after we recorded. But man,
My complaint about Nooney Murray has, I mean, it has very, very little of what I saw on Saturday, because Saturday's only a continuation of what surrounded him. I don't like to be particularly negative about a kid, but I basically tried to hint at this for the last 5 or 6 months. I don't have any confidence in Nooney Murray at any point to do it. Really, every game I take as a nice little bonus. And I'm not saying that he's a bad kid and that he's a kid necessarily that I expect one morning to wake up and see a notification that he's been kicked off the team or something. This isn't so much a character issue as it is, I don't think that kid wants to do what's necessary to play college football consistently at a high
it's
level.
It's not a character like moral character. It's a competitive character issue.
Yes, exactly. And there's two, and I don't know this for true, for absolute certainty, so I'm not going to say it. But I've heard some like what he grades out at, and it's indefensible as far as what he does when it comes to blocking assignment. And there's just too many things. There's a real good reason why that kid spent as much time as he did last year between the Ole Miss game and being put back in a place to make meaningful plays for this offense.
All right, I'll ask you: if he was not an FSU legend, is Dawsey still coaching after 10 years?
No, he's not. He's not at all. And if he's not, and if the other all right, what you said, I think is absolutely right. The other thing that I'll add that very much is in Dawsey's favor is he's one of the only few guys on that staff that had chances to leave in the first 24 months and didn't. That's the other reason he's on this staff.
Which factors into this loyalty thing that I know we're going to talk about at the end of the podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Because there's kind of an overemphasis on that right now. I know we'll talk about it.
Dawsey turned down 2 or 3 NFL jobs when in that first period. And I don't think they were even necessarily wide receiver. I don't know the exact position that he was offered. One, I believe, was a wide receivers coach, and another may have been at an organizational level. But he turned down 2 pretty significant jobs in his first 3 years at Florida State, and it did a lot for him in his head coach's eyes,
well,
in my opinion.
Look, maybe he would have been better in the NFL. Maybe there's some of the stuff that, like, if once you get to the NFL, you already know a certain amount, and, like, maybe he can coach the finer points, but just the you know, the basics are more difficult.
Maybe. Maybe he doesn't have to recruit.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't have a real good there's some not that he's like bad or doesn't. There's some things about Dawsey on the recruiting trail that he's not particularly highly thought of either, and not because of like the way he conducts himself or anything like that. He just doesn't do what other people do as far as having a full effort about it from A to Z throughout the process.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Can we talk about George Campbell? Because I want to be nice about something in the receiver group, and we need to talk about Campbell. We need to talk about Auden Tate, too, a little bit. George Campbell, 4 targets, 85 yards, had a 60-yarder. Man, that is exactly what we need from George Campbell, especially if Tate is going to miss, you know, some significant time, which we don't know. Jimbo Fisher seemed to be optimistic, but then again, you know, he has a separated AC joint, it seems. I don't know if it's a slight separation or whatever, but that's... that's what Jimbo Fisher actually revealed on his coach's show, which airs at, like, I don't know, sometime in the afternoon throughout most of the Southeast. George Campbell, man, using his speed to get open, caught the ball, seemed to, for the most part, be in the right place. I know he had a decent blocker or two. Man, that's what we need from George Campbell. I'm excited about that.
Great to see him play like that. And he was one of the only few people that actually made that secondary look the manner that they should. That is a weak unit that Florida State played against and should have been far more exposed than it was. Who did expose it is the guy that we'll talk about, and a guy that was well on his way to having like a Peter Warwick sophomore performance against Clemson or something like that as far as a statistical performance. Auden Tate, man, that is quite a nice little flash that you saw there in the first half, and now we kind of have to wonder when and what he'll look like the rest of the year.
I mean, using his size, he's not super fast, but you know, using decent speed. You know who it reminded me of a little bit? 2008, North Carolina came in here, and it was, who was the guy that caught like ridiculous number of balls for them in Doak that game? He had like 200 something yards receiving. Was it? I think it was Dwight Jones. Does that sound right?
I am to cheat right now. 8 catches for 233.
Yeah.
Yep.
Look, Tate, 9 for a 138, 51-yarder. Was playing hard, showing maturity. I know he had a couple good blocks before he left the game. I'm encouraged with that. I'm just really discouraged that Murray and Gavin didn't do more against the trash secondary, man. Just, That's just so disappointing. And I really think at this point it's on coaching. I mean, NC State's secondary is garbage, and they didn't do jack.
Certainly not. No, I mean, just a disappointing what you got out of those two kids. And as soon as Tate went down, Campbell had a better performance, but and certainly some question as to what you have at wide receiver, both on the field and on the sideline right now.
Tight end, they didn't really use him.
I mean, is there a whole lot to really talk about?
It blocks
about?
Some.
One,
no.
One target. Yeah.
I mean, they use him in practice.
I know he dropped or he didn't catch the one ball that was thrown to him. I'll absolutely stand by and say that Izzo is probably your best unit that you have, or your best player that you have on offensive unit as a whole.
Especially if Tate's hurt.
Especially if you don't have Tate as an option, but not really involved in what you did at all throughout the day. And I can't make lick of sense of that.
All right. I guess enough about the offense. Now, I will say the red zone errors, I went back and looked at them. There's not really a specific pattern of one position or type of it. Now, the receivers did make a lot of mistakes in there, but it just seems like the little details matter a whole lot more in that area because you're operating compressed space. You have to be that much more precise, and they didn't do a very good job of that. And thus, they went 1 of 6 in the red zone, which is the primary reason they lost this game. But we also got to talk a little defense here, Ingram. This was painful to watch because NC State's offense, we got to give them some credit on this stuff. That quarterback is actually really good. He makes very quick decisions. He puts the ball on the money, gives his guys an opportunity to run with it. And I thought they outcoached FSU both in terms of fundamentals and in terms of scheme.
Well, and they certainly situationally outcoached them. I don't mean to interrupt you there, but creative calls on third down, they situationally outcoached them to a level that's almost embarrassing.
Elijah Drinkwitz, the NC State OC, ate Charles Kelly's lunch. And I like Charles Kelly a lot, man. I mean, I think he loves those kids. I think those kids love him. Now they don't play for him, but I think they do love him on a personal level. Did FSU ever make NC State's offense look uncomfortable to you? Did they ever dictate terms? Did they ever do anything that really said, hey, we're a bunch of 4 and 5 star bad dudes? No. They let NC State dictate to them the whole game. This defense didn't do much well. They stopped the run for the most part. But man, God, like the errors of technique, the errors of discipline, of focus, of just situationally dumb football that are indicative of a badly coached defense. Mm-hmm. I've seen enough. I don't care how this defense plays the rest of the year. I don't want to see this defensive coaching staff back in Tallahassee intact. There's got to be some kind of change. I know it's only game 2, but we saw this crap last year. It cannot continue. These guys are not playing up to their potential. For the money Florida State's paying, they can do better and they should do better.
It's a real frustrating thing. You saw a lot of the things that, not nearly to the levels that you did last year, but you saw some of that uncertainty pre-snap that I thought and hoped that we would not be plagued by this year. You see Nate Andrews falling guilty of eye candy.
He doesn't
twice.
Need to play. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a jerk.
You can't play.
He is,
if you're
going to
do
good.
That as a fifth-year senior, you're not physically good enough to play. You're not.
The whole argument about him playing is, okay, he's so smart. He's so aware of the defense, his knowledge, blah, 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 coach on the field. Nonsense. He was one of the least disciplined players on the field Saturday. He cost Florida State that game. He was probably the worst player on the field on either side of the ball, maybe with the exception of Nooney Murray, who I'm still going to give the honor to Nate Andrews because Murray may have rolled his ankle in practice, according to one guy we talked to. If he is not going to play at a high level mentally, he does not need to play at all because physically, he's the least physically talented player on scholarship at Florida State. He was a 2-star recruit for a reason because he's small and he's slow. He made 8 interceptions as a freshman on that national championship defense, primarily because he was the guy that was always targeted when they were in 3rd and long situations. Opponents were desperate and they sure as hell couldn't throw at PJ Williams, Ronald Darby, Terrence Brooks, LaMarcus Joyner, or your freshman safety, who turns out is one of the best damn corners in the NFL now, Jalen Ramsey. And on that touchdown, there's no reason for him to follow a fake pitch. He's in man coverage. That's not his role. But yet, the fifth year or billionth year senior or whatever he is, blows that and goes and does that. All right, but look, that's enough about Nate Andrews. I put that on coaching, though. I really do. How many years is that in Charles Kelly's system? And he's still making mistakes like that? And the reason why I really put this on Coach Ingram is this. If it's one guy making mistakes, okay, maybe it's that player. Maybe he has a work ethic issue or something. If it's a lot of guys making those mistakes, that's on the coaching. And you can watch it. And you know, I watched Jimbo Fisher's coach's show today in addition to doing the film review and all the stuff we do on Tomahawk Nation. You know, Fisher's repeatedly saying, well, we're in this coverage. You know, we're a man under, so he needs to be underneath the receiver, you know, to force them to throw the ball over him and in front of the safety. Okay, well, look, that may seem really clear to Jimbo Fisher, but I don't know if he understands that it's not clear to his players. The message that this defensive coaching staff, and especially this secondary staff, is teaching is not getting through. These guys are not playing with any type of discipline, with confidence, with focus, and their technique, to be honest, is not that good. Like, their man technique, for the guys that didn't grow up playing it in high school, I don't think it's that great. I don't think they're doing a good job of teaching that. And look, Fisher often says, you know, you practice it not till you get it right, but till you can't do it wrong. Well, they may need a lot more practice, man, because they had repeated screw-ups. The secondary was a huge letdown against especially the coaching of the secondary was a huge letdown here against a group of receivers that are really not that special.
All right, bud. Nice little pause here as we remind our friends of everything that Madison Social and For the Table Restaurant Group has done for us. This will be the last probably podcast that we get to mention the 5th annual Florida Tap Invitational presented by Proof Brewing and For the Table Hospitality. 40 Floridian craft breweries, 100 new and rare beers. Friday night from 7 to 10, Madison Social and Township will have a kickoff party, but the actual event is on Saturday. We've mentioned this previously, but $55 gets you a general admission ticket, $100 gets you a VIP ticket. It is the Florida 2017 Florida Tap Invitational, and maybe no better way than to ease the pain of a 0-2 start by going and sampling some of Florida's best offerings.
Look, after an 0-2 start, you're going to need a VIP ticket for this. All right, don't even buy, like, just get the VIP ticket. All right, I need a VIP amount of alcohol after this, and then Uber home or take a cab or whatever. But yeah, man, they have great beers, and I'm pretty sure they'll show up and deliver. Unlike this football team so far this year, you know what else delivers is Madison Social's excellent brunch. I know a number of my friends went there on Sunday after the game, and look, man, it's just always really good. It's a good spot. Matt and his crew do a great job. They've got three great restaurant concepts with Madison Social, which is your really nice upscale pub grub type spot with the patio out there and beautiful weather now this time of year. But like Saturday was hot, but it wasn't crazy hot. You know, it was tolerable. Central, which is a really nice Italian spot, and then also Township, which is a really cool beer garden and beer hall. So make sure you support our sponsors and let them know how much you love the Nolcast and support them and support us by giving us 5-star reviews on iTunes.
So I think it's probably fair that we mentioned that Derwin James didn't have his best day on the field. And also, look, anytime you lose a game, you're going to look back at stuff and it's easy to second-guess coaching. But some of the ways that we tried to use him in that game had me scratching my head a little bit as well.
100%. Okay, so look, we talked about in the preview, the game plan for this game will largely be what it was last year with some adjustments to see how NC State countered some of your stuff last year, right? Do you remember talking about that? Because like a lot of the players were the same. All right. Last year, Florida State brought a lot of edge pressure against NC State, and NC State threw behind it when Florida State did not compensate by bringing a safety down. Guess what happened in this game? Blitz off the corner. Quarterback with a really quick release who's real smart and real accurate. Pops the ball to the slot receiver. Where's the safety? Oh, he's still way back. What the hell is going on there? And it happened, what, 4 or 5 times? That's inexcusable right there. They also ran the same stretch run play about 15 times, but ultimately Florida State defended it more correctly than not. But man, a lack of creativity in your blitz packages, not really sending anybody up the gut ever. It did seem very predictable. Guys were walking up there to blitz well before the snap count. NC State very smartly did that to them a number of times. Look, and I don't want to not give credit to NC State. I think their offensive game plan was really good. They coached circles around Charles Kelly. He always seemed to be one play behind. You know, Jimbo Fisher got into him pretty hard on the sideline, it looked like, from up there in the box when we were looking down after that last conversion. Guys with poor situational awareness. Florida State outplayed NC State on a down-to-down basis and lost this game because it played situations poorly. And that is indicative of coaching, period. This is not good enough. It's not good.
You mentioned this 10, 15 minutes ago about the lack of production in the red zone and that it's where details really matter. There's not an area in the entirety of the in-game performance of this program right now that is reflective of a team that is prepared to the granular level and is particularly wise and fully knowledgeable as to the details of what is being asked of them and having the ability to execute it.
100%. And, I mean, look, this is... Tavares McFadden, right? I thought he had turned the corner physicality-wise. He seemed to be up to the challenge against Alabama. In this game, mental errors and just no interest in playing the run, playing blocks. Westbrook out of position, not playing his man like he needed to be playing. And we can sit here and rip individual players, but ultimately when you rip this many guys, you're like, huh, I wonder how you get all these really good athletes and they're not playing up to their potential, like across the board. It's almost as if maybe the guy in charge of coaching them is not doing a good enough job.
The only thing I'll say for McFadden is he's the only person who made a play on the ball twice in the game. He has,
well, Derwin caught a pick that should have stood as
off
a pick.
Of McFadden's tip. He does. He makes.
Yeah,
a pick.
That's fair.
And McFadden has a nice breakup in the first quarter as well. So he's the only. We talked in the preview particularly that if you pick this kid, it's probably not going to be because he throws some, you know, slow, lazy 15-yard out that you undercut. It's going to be because you get your hands up, you knock balls in the air, you disrupt routes, you just make this offense not be able to have quite the timing that the quarterback in particular would like to have. And McFadden's the only person who changed the directional flight of a football throughout the day.
That's exactly what we said. It'd probably be on a tip. And you're right, he did. I just thought, man, that more physicality needed from him.
Not saying he had a great game. I just run game. Want to acknowledge what he did do.
No, you're right.
Another thing that we talked about, Bud, and this is particularly frustrating, I don't understand what we're doing on defense at all when, again, something we talked about extensively in a preview, and if two guys can get something right in a preview, I'm particularly frustrated if coaching staff doesn't have the ability to at least game plan around that come the following Saturday. NC State is not going to threaten anybody deep down the field and wasn't going to particularly do that to us either. And that's something that we talked about a good bit. And it was not seemingly, I don't know, just some of the gaps that we were giving up, some of the deeper... it was like we were playing against a unit that had a Torrey Holt in it or something like that. I don't understand some of the spacing that we had in the secondary in particular.
100% agree. They didn't challenge them. It was like they had a lack of confidence in their own guys, which, hey, given all the errors they made, maybe they should have, but how about you teach them right and you make them confident and you really have them trust in your scheme and your plan? Ingram, how many special plays did NC State's receivers make?
Nothing jumps out at me.
Exactly. And yet they converted, what, 6 third downs of 6 yards or more or something like that? A lack of contested balls in this game really bothered me. We said you've got to get up there. You have to play denial defense. It's kind of like in basketball. You know, you're fronting, right? Yep. Right? Man, I'm just getting more annoyed the more I talk about that. That's trash. That FSU ticket holders deserve better than to see guys with that much athletic talent look like clowns on the field. That's on the coaching staff. Really poor job. Linebacker, by the way, I thought was a little bit better than I first thought, given how many guys they had go out during that game. You know, you didn't have Dontavius Jackson. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there with that. I don't want to really speculate because I had heard some conflicting things. Obviously, Matthew Thomas hurts his back. Emmitt Rice is vomiting on the sideline at one point. Man, I just, it's the secondary. They really let the defense down. I thought the front played fairly okay.
Josh Sweat's another guy. Didn't have a perfect game, but he played the run as well as I've seen him play in his time here. And I thought Sweat played a pretty good game, all things considered.
You could tell he was visibly upset when I asked him about this on Saturday, or visibly frustrated at least. And I said, hey, you know, it's gotta bother you when you beat your man in a pass rush and you're going at the QB and the ball comes out real quick and you look back and it's complete, like over and over again. He's like, yeah, you know, it is frustrating. You think, you know, he was frustrated. Man, FSU just got out-coached badly. Right, and it's a testament to how much athleticism and talent Florida State has, especially up front, that they didn't give up more points. It's not because of the coaching staff. The coaching staff is the reason why they lost this game. And I don't usually go in on the staff like this, but this was really embarrassing.
Big picture, bud, what do you think we take from this?
Well, I mean, you got to bump your win-loss record down one, right? Because you suffered a non-Clemson, non-freshman quarterback blow-up type loss, right? I'm bumping mine down one. I thought they were gonna lose three. Now I think they'll lose four.
Think that's pretty fair. I will certainly go to three with a more of an expectation of four and a concern in general. I mean, look, not realistic to think that if you lose either of these next two games, you're and I don't think Florida State's losing to Wake Forest, but I do have a concern of Florida State not beating Miami, and then you're looking at. You're looking at just about anything on the table, I think, if you have a program that's 1-3. So we'll see. It'd be no reason to go all worst case scenario. But as far as the win loss projection, you've failed to collect a win in your first two games. And at that point, the significance to me, to an extent, is just watered down. And what I mean by that is there's very few of the goals. Now you still have your goals of being beating Florida. And Miami, obviously, and theoretically, you could be a player in this conference, but nothing that you've seen on the field makes you think that we need to spend our time talking about Florida State winning this conference right now. So,
no, absolutely not.
You've played two games, and the vast majority of what you wanted to achieve has already been removed or taken off the table, and that is unexcusable.
And yet, I'm still going to enjoy this season. I mean, I'm still going to enjoy watching certain guys develop. I still want to see how this defense improves, if it does. But unfortunately, I have zero confidence in them playing with consistency from week to week. And this right now, under Jimbo Fisher's leadership, he's allowed a coaching staff to get stale for the message not to be soaked up by these guys and to produce a consistently sloppy product. He doesn't have a Jameis Winston right now, and I've always been one of those guys, look, it's not all Jameis, and it's not, right? He had a lot of other really super, super special players on that team. But right now, he's producing a sloppy, substandard product relative to the talent FSU recruits and relative to expectations. And you know, hey, it's 2 years in a row of it now. 2015 was a rebuilding year. I get that. 16 and 17? No, those were years where if you had done a better job coaching, I think you had a legit shot to make a title run, and you didn't do it. Look, I do want to give Jimbo a little bit of slack, okay? I don't want to say that Jimbo should be fired because I don't think he should be. But I do think, Ingram, eventually you're gonna miss when you have to replace coach after coach after coach. And do you remember Jimbo? And I looked for the direct quote, and I couldn't find it, but basically it was something like this. It's like, I love when other programs come after my coaches.
Yeah, I do.
And hire him away because it shows that I'm making good hires. It shows that we're doing something right here. You remember that? Mm-hmm. You say that a lot. And then who on this staff do you really think could get hired away for a promotion?
Brewster would get hired away immediately for promotion. Mm.
A promotion.
No, one for a promotion.
Isn't that an indictment on Jimbo Fisher's hires?
I only think there's so many people on this staff that would be an immediate hire for other people. But, I mean, Bruce...
You mean like for lateral moves?
Brewster would be employed immediately. Lawing would be employed immediately.
Higgins would be employed immediately.
Odell would be, even as old Absolutely. As he would be employed the next day.
I think Graham would be for sure. Maybe not as a special teams coordinator, but he's done a pretty good job with running backs.
Yes, maybe not as a special teams coordinator.
By the way, do you think Charles Kelly has taken over special teams?
I
Because he was certainly, and I don't know if the TV showed this, but looking down on the sidelines, and I like to do the sideline watching, he was a hell of a lot more involved in special teams than I've seen him in a couple of
Interesting.
Years.
Interesting.
Almost harkening back to the time
when he was running special teams. Yeah, that's, I didn't notice that if that was the case on TV. No, I didn't.
I'm not saying he has. I'm just saying, huh, I wonder if he's either taken over or is more involved.
I think that's a great question. Yeah, I think that's a great question and a great observation. Just saying that that's not something that I caught on this end.
All right, would Lawrence Dossie be hired to be a receivers coach at another program?
At another program, yes. At another program of this caliber, not a chance.
Yes.
No.
Another super elite program, would Rick Trickett? I don't think so. Not at his age, at least. You know, would Bill Miller? Again, how old is Bill Miller?
Miller wouldn't, man, but Miller in the...
he's done a much better job than people want to give him credit for.
In the flat catching versus job doing scale, Miller catches way more than he probably should. At the same time, I think Miller has to go, and it's not even Miller's fault.
He's 61.
He's just too similar to too many aspects of this staff.
Are you saying, like, old white dudes?
This is not the first. We've been talking about this for 3 years, by the way, and I'll give you credit for identifying this at a time when a lot of people gave you a lot of crap for it. They gave me so much. The composition of this staff is a problem, and you can only have so many old white guys that are eligible for AARP cards, and that's half a joke, dead ass serious in the other half.
Jimbo is 51. Rick Trickett is 59 or 69. Lawrence Dossie is 49. Tim Brewster is 56. Randy Sanders is 52. Jay Graham is 42. Brad Lawing is 60. Odell Higgins is 50. Bill Miller is 51. Charles Kelly is 50. And that is an average of 55. So on average, our coaches are eligible for silver service checking at Colonial Bank.
Odell's right. Only 50?
And they can get they can get the McDonald's coffee. So if you can get the senior coffee on average as a staff, you might want to consider going a little younger, because you know what? Maybe younger people communicate a little bit differently with other young people. Maybe they can say, hey, coach, I don't really get this quite so much. Or maybe they feel a little more comfortable going to somebody, you know, who's not old enough to be their grandparent.
Well, we're rabbit trailing to an extent here, but three of your best recruiters on this staff are officially on your staff, but aren't as position coaches. And that's... I'm not necessarily saying you got to hire those guys, although I think they do a very good job for you. I think you have to realize why those guys are as good recruiters as they are, and that maybe the staff needs to have a little bit more variance in its composition.
Let me see if you think this is a fair statement. For as kind of average of recruiters as some of these guys are, they are not good enough as coaches to make up for their recruiting shortcomings.
But, there's a little bit of ambiguity. I know you understand what I'm saying there, but I'm referring to Sinceri and Wilson and the other people on that staff that are as good as they are.
Addison and Damian Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. They're definitely propping those guys up some. But I guess back to our original point here, look, you're going to make some misses when you have to replace coach after coach after coach. I mean, he lost Eddie Grand to promotion. He lost Mark Stoops, DJ Elliott, all those guys to promotions, James Coley to a promotion. It's okay to miss. You're not going to be a perfect coach and hire, you know, A-plus guy after A-plus guy constantly, right? But the thing is, you have the power, Jimbo, to correct some of these misses that you've made in hiring. And you've been more than fair and more than patient. And you've given these guys plenty of time to figure out if the new ones you brought in can coach or not. If they can coach at this level and really go to that level. And you know what? The answer for an unfortunate number of these guys is no. It just is, man. How many coaches has Jimbo Fisher ever fired at Florida State?
That's a rhetorical silence is what I'm giving you right there.
Okay, because we know the answer is either zero or one. Well, it depends on you know, there was a substance abuse issue.
There was one guy who fired himself far before Jimbo Fisher fired him.
Other than that, I think everybody who's left this staff has left for a legit promotion. He's never got rid of a coach here. The problem I have with this, and I have some worry in this, but I still have faith in Jimbo Fisher's coach. I do think he's a really good coach, and I think the people that want to fire him are kind of nuts, to be honest. Like, the chance you improve on Jimbo is real small. The chance you backslide is real high. But there's a couple things here. One, the loyalty thing. I know recently he mentioned that loyalty is the number one quality he looks for in a coach.
That's a bad answer.
But to me, when I think of that, I think a couple things. Number one, look, man, events in his personal and professional life in like the last 3 years may be causing him to value loyalty a little bit too much. And I'm not going to go into that more than what I just said, but if you know what I'm talking about, then you know what I'm talking about.
What you said is explanatory.
Additionally, when I think loyalty, sometimes I think yes men. Guys who are a little too afraid to speak up and challenge what he wants or to go against the status quo and to make meaningful changes. Loyalty is a fine trait, but it's not the most important trait in coaching. And do you think that the reason why he said loyalty is maybe to take a shot at Jeremy Pruitt for, you know, for leaving after he assured the staff that he was not leaving? I don't know. Part of me thinks that, like, yeah, he wants guys who won't leave him. But that's not what he needs.
Part of me, but man, that answer is not that old that he gave. And if you're still thinking about Jeremy Pruitt at this point, I got a problem with that in and of itself. I mean, yeah, you're not the first person to get burned in the coaching industry by somebody. So I hope he's not taking a shot. I hope Jeremy Pruitt doesn't exist inside Jimbo's Fisher's headspace. But you may very well be right, and he certainly is an individual that would have reason to place that character trait on a high portion of his totem pole.
So, because he's never fired a coach, and because he has a 10-year rather ridiculous contract that I know we were probably the only people in FSU media to say this is a mistake to sign a contract this long if you're the school. Remember that? Mm-hmm. We're like, why do you care? He's, you know, a national champ. Like, dude, 10 years is too long. It's way too long. The school really has absolutely no leverage on Jimbo Fisher. If he wants to keep these same coaches, he can. So where does the impetus to change come from? Is it embarrassment? Is it pride? Is it drive? Is it some combination of all three? And what sort of record do you think FSU needs to have for Jimbo to take a hard look at this and say, all right, this isn't working. We're not playing up to our potential. It's going to start costing us in recruiting. Because if they finish 8-3, like you said, which means just one more loss, I don't think changes get made. I think he's going to go with the same, you know, turned it around narrative. Maybe we'll sign some promise notes and all that crap. But I don't think 8-3 is necessarily like a super likely record.
At this point, I've hard to see not catching four losses at the minimum.
Do you think he makes changes, like meaningful changes, like multiple? And I'll set the over-under at 2.5.
I think he's got to make a change. If they lose another game, but I think they've got to make another change. If they lose two games, they certainly do. I mean, I personally think this is going to have an impact on recruiting. Now, maybe not so much for 2018, but 2019. This is 2 years in a row you've been. Now, you fought your way back in. You played in Orange Bowl. You won the Orange Bowl. But this is 2 years in a row you've been out of the national conversation from before you got to Halloween. And hell, before you get to October this year. That matters to kids. I mean, it really does. And each year that we go after this a little bit further from the days when Telvin Smith and Jameis Winston were taking the field. So you just, I think you're going to, you put yourself in a really great place for 2019. And I don't think you're going to be able to capitalize it at maybe the rate that you would have been otherwise. It's not the end of the world. You got a lot of time to recover, but for these big national kids, going 0-2 is not the way to start.
No, it's not. It's really not. Man, by the way, the crowds the rest of the year are going to suck.
That's kind of a whole other conversation that we have to be honest.
Yeah, we've been talking to some local businesses, and they're worried, man. Between the hurricane and Jimbo Fisher's team laying a huge egg to start the year for the second straight year.
And the schedule's not good.
Yeah.
Schedule's not
good. It's not going to be good, man. No, the schedule sucks.
So,
by the way, can we go back to this? We talked about this, like, what, 6 years ago when they were kicking around that Alabama thing? And the first thing I said, and I'm not trying to do like that, I was right about this thing, was why the hell would you play Alabama in an odd-numbered year when you're already going on the road to Clemson and Florida? Play a big neutral site game in an even-numbered year when you host Florida and you host Clemson and you only have to go to Miami as far as your road schedule. That's just bad scheduling. Every time they were like, hey, I got a big non-conference game in an odd numbered year. I'm thinking, like, on the road. I'm like, why? That's a murderer's row schedule. It's dumb. It's a pet peeve.
Legitimate legitimate and legitimately a conversation that I remember having 6 or 7 years with you as well. So
you have confidence he'll make changes if they lose two more games.
I think he will. As much as some look, have to make changes. You're completely right. Have to do anything. He's got a contract that Jimbo Fisher doesn't have to do anything. But I do think there will be enough background noise that something will be done, and maybe give Jimbo Fisher the benefit of the doubt in the fact that maybe he realizes that, or maybe the best thing possible is for him to have a couple of 2019 kids be like, yeah, not really particularly interested in the program right now, or something like that. I think Jimbo Fisher responds to certain things, and maybe the fact that his recruiting could be impacted is as much of a catalyst for him making a decision to make a change as anything out there.
Yeah, man, I'm hoping so. These guys, I feel bad for some of the kids on his team that just aren't being coached up.
Well, Bud, we were just a second ago talking about some of the scheduling and what it means. And this is not a great year, whether it's scheduling your big marquee non-conference game in game one, or the fact that you go to Gainesville this year, that's just something different and not anything that I think this fan base has encountered before.
Yeah, Ingram, unfortunately, the U.S. Department of State has to warn U.S. citizens about the risk of traveling to certain parts of Gainesville due to criminal activities of criminal organizations in those areas. A travel warning has been issued. U.S. citizens have been the victims of theft crimes in various Alachua County areas, a wide-ranging conspiracy encompassing the entire United States. Over 60 credit cards used. This travel warning replaces the travel warning for Gainesville issued on December 16th, 2016. So, very unfortunate to see that. It looks like potentially, 60 felony charges?
60 felony charges. And part of what I thought we should do is just make sure that we go ahead and disperse this notification that had been issued.
It's about safety.
Wide to the fan base and want to be as educational and informative 100%, as possible.
Man, you got to be about safety, and we're all about keeping our listeners safe. We recommend cash only.
One guy in particular, maybe. Yeah, no credit card transactions. I would encourage anybody to go buy the RFID blocker little sleeve that you can put over debit card, credit cards. Those things, you can get them for like $2 on Amazon. They're fantastic. That I'm actually being serious about. But yeah, you don't want to really put any kind of electronic exchange anywhere near Gainesville right now. Otherwise, you could be buying Jordan Scarlett a new laptop. Who knows?
You mentioned exchange. What is the exchange rate for Apple products, by the way?
Yeah, good question. Or what happens when one character pulls down, 39 felony charges? That's incredible. Well done, D-Son.
Yeah, well, that can occur when you attempt to use 9 different credit cards like in a row, right? Because, Ingram, wouldn't you know it, that might draw suspicion. Like, if you enter 9 different credit card numbers, you might get flagged for that. Yeah, so, look, very unfortunate. That's pretty clearly criminal. And not a mistake. Like, that's stealing. And I know some people might look at that as a victimless crime. I understand if you want to argue it that way. I don't think there's
a couple people in Carlsbad, California that would quite clearly identify that it's not a victimless crime.
Also, look, for the most part, college kids are not successful at designing white-collar crime rings. Like, you're going to get caught. Don't do this. That's really
dumb. You aren't going to be able to get away with it. Do you know why? Because other dumb college kids before you have tried something like that. You're not the first person.
You know who gets away with this? The mob. They're professional criminals, right? Like, they don't have to practice football 20 hours a week. Oh, God. By the way, I also have a fun fact to read on, this is our fun fact part of the show. We know that Gator blogs love fun facts. Ingram, do you know how many yards Florida's defense has given up to running back so far?
I don't know the total yardage. I do not.
That would be 530 yards on 90 carries. So a sweet 5.9 yards per carry.
Looking forward to that. That have one aspect of optimism that has not waned at all is the Florida game and potentially what we might be able to do on the ground against them.
They can't stop the run. That's
somebody,
very exciting.
Somebody will either run north of 200 or two backs will account for 300 yards total against them. I'm just going to go ahead and have that be my bombastic prediction that I stick by throughout the rest of the year.
Jocky Patrick is going to have a 10-yard run. All right, double-digit yard run for Jocques Patrick. It's going to happen against the Gators.
Boom, put it down.
So I went and I pulled some numbers from last year. These are the guys who, against FBS winning programs, so you know D1 teams with winning records, last season had the same number. So at least 90 carries and 530-plus yards, so 5.9 a carry or better against those good teams. Royce Freeman, Brandon Radcliffe, Josh Adams, Jamal Williams, Justin Crawford, Joe Mixon, Demaryius Crockett, Damian Harris, Bo Scarborough, Darius Geis, Deontay Foreman, Anthony Wales, and Dalvin Cook. So essentially, the Gators are allowing everybody to run like Heisman finalists against them this year, which is surprising a little bit.
Very. One last thing I wanted to end with, Bud. This is just something that stood out to me over the past 3 weeks or so. One, if you played fantasy football, pro fantasy football, you've certainly noticed what Florida State's running backs are doing. Devonta Freeman began the year by being, at least temporarily so, the highest paid running back in the year in the league. Couldn't happen to a better kid. That's awesome. Chris Thompson, I know what you and I's thoughts are on him as an individual, and not anybody that we could be just deserves that more. And a guy who just signed not what Freeman did, but also a guy who signed a very legitimate second contract and is a very valued piece of his franchise. And Dalvin Cook is off to doing pretty much what people would have expected him if you've watched this program over the past 3 years. So. Really great stuff from the running back position in particular. Three guys who have Cook hasn't gotten his second contract, but three guys that have gotten significant paydays. And there's one fourth person who I want to point out, Bud. And I'll be honest with you, don't know him personally, but always somebody that I wanted the best for. And at times, just based on some of the stuff that he's posted on social media, I wasn't sure how things were going for him. But James Wilder has turned into the best player in the Canadian Football League. And I'm not making a joke or slighting him. He is an absolute beast, man. Go and look at what he's done the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I just had a friend of mine, actually, whose opinion I value about football in general, who was up in Toronto on business, went and watched a game this weekend. And he's legitimately like the talk of Toronto. Like, people can't get over that they have this freakish running back. But, yeah, I think he's gone for north of 160 the past two games, and he's just become maybe the best player in the league. And really, really happy for James. That's not a guy that I was sure was going to be able to play football at a professional level, and he looks like he's found a niche for himself, and he's one of the better players in a league that certainly isn't going to rival the NFL as far as compensation, but you can make a really solid earning and have a nice life doing that. So happy to see him having the success that he has.
Dude, that's awesome. The our Maple Leaf Knowles now. We got Kenny Shaw, I think, he was still up there until he got hurt, and James Wilder.
You know, a third guy that my friend saw play this weekend. Maybe not quite the guy that we put in a classification as warm and fuzzies for when we look back on it, but one, Marcus Ball is still collecting a paycheck, playing ball at a pretty high level up there as well.
Playing linebacker, I hope?
Playing. Well, that league is so wild. He just kind of runs around and, well, not that he was particularly, not that he was necessarily disciplined, either on or off the field was one of Marcus's strengths. But, yeah, he pretty much just gets to run around and hit people. And, you know, that guy was on a roster, I think, until a year or two ago in the league. So never physical.
Oh, Marcus Ball. Oh, I thought you were talking about Marcus Sims. Ball. Ball was a beast. Yeah, he just couldn't.
Did I say Marcus Sims?
No, you said Marcus Ball, okay, but in my head I was thinking Marcus Sims for a second.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about running backs and football. Dude, Marcus Ball was always a beast. He just had like a lot.
a lot like, going on in his head. Maybe even chemically sometimes. Who knows?
Yeah. altered state,
yeah,
perhaps at times.
Yeah, no, he's playing for the he and Wilder are both on the Toronto Argonauts and are really, really damn good players, evidently. Ball just stands out as a freak. I don't know how statistically he is productive, but good player.
This concludes this episode of the Nullcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenullcast@gmail.com or tweet us at Nullcast. Now look, the team ain't doing so hot right now, but we got to stick together because we're going to keep covering it no matter what the team does, the same way that I'm going to keep making predictions even though I'm always wrong. So, this is a weird time for Florida State football, but you don't need to be going on the journey alone. Stick around with us and we'll give you the best analysis you need for every step along the way. Today's date is September 26, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out. We'll be right back.